Welcome in to another edition of Golden Black Radio. I'm your host, Derek Schultz. Purdue football has a new head man in charge, and he'll have to hit the ground running with the portal window already open. On the basketball court, the Boilers had to fight for a split after a really sloppy, to say the least, loss to Penn State and a late rally over Maryland. We're going to talk about it all. Football, basketball, the whole deal with Tom Dienert and Brian Newbert in another extended Tuesday edition here of GBR in just a bit. But first, a thank you to our sponsors that make Golden Black Radio possible, including Purdue Federal Credit Union, a proud partner of Purdue Athletics and the official credit card for Purdue fans, Boiler Up. East End Grill and Rippling Company, two distinctive bistros across the street from one another on the far end of Main Street, the perfect place for your next event. And the Whitaker Inn, for unparalleled comfort and cuisine, visit the Whitaker Inn. Let's bring on football analyst, goldenblack.com, our good friend Tom Dienert, to talk about the new hire. And Tom, new guy in charge in Barry Odom, and given his background and this resume, I don't think this is a surprise. It looks like the type of guy, the type of coach that was exactly the profile that fits what Mike Babinski and Purdue were looking for in this search.
Yeah, I mean, personality-wise, Derek, he kind of is Purdue personified in a lot of ways. Blue-collar, tough, no frills, no nonsense, kind of roll your sleeves up and just get to work. The kind of guy, Derek, you know that no job is too small for him. Whatever needs to be done, he's going to do it. So, and what's also appealing about Barry is he's a dues payer. Yeah, he's only 48 years old, I believe, but he's worn about every hat you can in football, working his way up from high school, GA, recruiting, director of football ops, you know, position coach, DC head coach. So, I think from all those standpoints, he's a good fit, and I think he's going to bring a lot of the discipline and toughness that this program needs right now.
Yeah, you mentioned discipline and toughness. Not that like Purdue had players that were in the police blotter or anything like that, but even when you go back to the Jeff Brohm era, you know, there was a level of sloppiness, right? Poorly timed penalties, getting up for big games, which was nice, but then sometimes sleepwalking through lesser opponents, and you're like, why is Purdue losing to so-and-so? So even though, obviously, you know, the Brohm era was a lot more successful than the Walters era, I think this has kind of been a bugaboo for Purdue. Am I right in saying the last, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 years where there hasn't been a lot of that sort of, like, discipline-level stuff in the program that it looks like Barry Odom brings to the table?
Yeah, you're exactly right. I always harken back to that game at Syracuse a few years ago where they had a total meltdown at the end with the penalties. And we saw many ill-timed penalties these last couple years, too. It's the dead ball penalties. I think coaches can live with live ball penalties a lot of times. They're not ideal, but at least you're giving effort. You're trying. It's some of the jumping off sides thing, after the whistle things, unsportsmanlike conduct, selfish behavior that drives coaches batty. And those are some of the things we saw under Brohm and under Ryan Walters, too. So, you know, it's funny that Odom mentioned today, everybody sort of wants discipline. Sometimes they don't think they want it. But when they get it, I think they appreciate it. You know, we don't want what's good for us, right? And he talked about that at UNO, but he didn't think some of the guys, when he got there, wanted it. Turns out they thrived under it. And I think that's the hope here, too. There's a lot to sort out, Derek. Let's not be short-sighted here. The roster is in a lot of disrepair right now. Anybody who follows the program knows the portal situation. You mentioned the portal's open as of Monday, so he's got to have all boots on the ground and running here to get this thing up to shape. We'll see. The staff's got to be built. Talked about the portal, high school recruiting. Is he still going to add some guys there as well? So there's a lot of questions hanging in the air for Barry right now.
And, you know, everyone that enters the portal doesn't automatically mean that they're leaving, right? I think any player that's doing his due diligence should enter the portal. You should at least let people know that you're out there, hear from the new coach, the new staff, and also hear from others, and then just kind of make a decision on what's best for you. I know some people, old school college football fans, don't like it, but that's the new reality of what we're living in college football. But from what you've heard, I'm assuming Barry and his staff are going to hit the ground running and contacting some of those players, at least the ones that they would like to see back in Golden Black next year.
Yeah, for sure. I'm not sure where they're at in that process. Mm-hmm. I'm sure he's made some effort, maybe had some dialogue with some of those guys. The key guys being, I think we all will agree, right? Max Clair, Will Helt, and Dylan Thieneman.
Yeah.
So, and I go back to the staff. It sounds like maybe we'll get some answers on the staff here by the end of the week, if not sooner. specifically the coordinator situation, who those guys are going to be, who's coming from UNLV. Is he going to retain anybody? Is he going to bring some people in from the outside, from neither UNLV nor Purdue? I think that's a definite possibility, too. So I'm sort of eager to get a look to see what this staff looks like. And he's, like I said, he's going to need all hands on deck here as he works through the early days of the program, no doubt.
Next question is, you know, we know about Odom. We know about his background. Now it's, you know, we're talking about what he's going to bring to the table. Now it's about what Purdue is going to bring to the table for him. And that starts with, obviously, the NIL space. But but just in general, you know, the commitment to football and all of that, because I think Purdue fans are very aware of what's going on down the street from them and the hefty financial commitments that are being made at a rival school, which will remain nameless, that may or may not still be playing this weekend against another rival school. I think you guys can do the math at home and figure out who I'm talking about. But I mean, Tom, am I right in saying that that's the open-ended question here is what is Purdue going to be able to present as far as NIL especially is concerned?
I asked Coach Odom that today, if he thought the NIL situation at Purdue was adequate, and he gave the right answer. He did. Mike Bobanski chimed in as well. You know, revenue sharing is going to start next year.
Sure.
He said Purdue is going to fund up to the max. $20.5 million is the max any school can spend in revenue sharing. That's for the entire athletic department. Football will certainly have a large chunk of that. How big of a chunk? Each school can make their own determination, but I'm sure Barry Odom must have heard answers to his satisfaction. On top of the revenue share, Derek, there's still the NIL, the Boilermaker Alliance, the collectives out there that you can go up and beyond what you can share revenue sharing wise with athletes too. So again, I get the sense Barry Odom got the answers that he was looking for, or he probably wouldn't have came here, because as we all know, if you aren't competitive in the NIL space, you have a very difficult time really being competitive, especially in a league, Derek, like the Big Ten now with these 18 teams.
And not that UNLV is Tennessee or anything, but clearly they're a little bit of a player in the NIL space, like certainly more than, let's say, Western Kentucky or a MAC school or some of the other candidates that we talked about. Do you think that, besides his SEC pedigree, you know, obviously coaching for four seasons at Missouri, do you think that made him an attractive candidate as well, in the fact that he's navigated the NIL space maybe more so than a lower tier, you know, non-power four or non, I don't even know what you want to call it, power six level coach like he was at UNLV?
Yeah, the fact that he did that at that level with, a very modest NIL situation at UNLV, a Mountain West school. I don't think many schools out there probably have a lot of money to spend, you know, Boise State, of course, being one of them. But yeah, the fact that he was able to be competitive, at least among his peers in that league, right? He was able to be competitive among his peers in the Mountain West to the point where he won 19 games in 2 years, went to back-to-back Mountain West title games at a school, Derek, that if you're any kind of a football fan, you know UNLV football has been off the radar, typically is always off the radar, for generations. And he had two of the greatest seasons in school history in just 2 years. Again, doing that against peer programs who all probably had pretty similar NIL budgets, if any at all. So that had to appeal to Purdue. I tell you what, anytime you can display the ability to win on any level, especially a lower level, I think really shows what kind of a coach you really are.
I remember on a previous show that I don't think that I was on, you had mentioned you talked to a colleague or a friend of yours that is in the college football space, and you asked him to rank the open jobs when UCF and the other ones were still open, North Carolina, et cetera. And I think he had Purdue fourth on the list out of the four schools. Given that, just kind of the national perspective of where this job lands, do you think that this is – did they do well in getting somebody like Barry Odom to agree to come here to take this on?
I think so, all things considered. Again, Mike Bobanski said it again today, Derek. It's a good job. It's not an easy job. There's a lot of resources here, good facilities. There's good support. But your competition is off the charts tough, right? And Barry Odom checked a lot of boxes for Mike Bobanski. I think he was probably his main target, or at least one of his top two or three targets. Proven head coach. I think Purdue had to have that. I think personality-wise, I talked about that. I think that was a big fit. I think that was important as well. A guy who embodies the university's work ethic and just overall personality, I think, was big too. And a guy who's done it in multiple places. He's been in the SEC. He's been a head coach in the biggest league out there, right? The SEC for 4 years at Missouri. He was a 500 coach. His first job had to follow a legend in Gary Pinkel, which was not easy. So he's walked in some big shoes, coached on some big stages, had success, and he replicated that success at a lower level at UNLV, a program that historically, like I said, has really just been a one that's really struggled a lot. So, you know, he's not an offensive guy, Derek. I thought maybe they would want to go offense. And Mike Bobanski said at the start, he didn't care. He just wanted a winner. And he stuck by his word from his press conference about a week or so ago that he didn't care offense, defense. He just wanted a winner. And it looks like he got a winner in Barry Odom, who happens to come from the defensive side of the ball. And a guy, again, who's proven that he can get it done at different levels.
Any kind of a timeline on staff? On, I know you had touched on it earlier, or even, you know, I think the hope was for some Purdue fans that if we're going to follow this Kirk Cignetti model where you get the coach and then you get half the staff and then you get half the roster, I know that's an extreme example, but maybe some players that played under Dave Odom that want to step up into a Power Four league like the Big Ten as well.
Yeah, I think, like I said, we may learn some things about the staff later this week. Mm-hmm. Maybe we'll find out who some of those members are. You know, everybody, Derek, is hot for the UNLV offensive coordinator to come to Purdue. Brennan Marion, he runs the go-go offense out there in Vegas, and it's been highly successful. And fans are eager for him to make the move to West Lafayette. My early read is I'm not so sure he's coming here. So just keep that on your radar. And as far as players from UNLV, I certainly think there's probably a raft of guys who will follow Barry here. Now, understand this. His team this last fall was very senior-oriented. Yeah. I think he said he had 30 seniors on it. And if you look at the all-conference team from the Mountain West, there's a bunch of UNLV guys, and most of them are seniors. But there's still some younger talent on there that I'm sure would like to follow Barry for the chance not just to follow Barry, but to play in the Big Ten, for crying out loud, right? Mm-hmm. What a boon there. And how many guys can he flip in the UNLV recruiting class, which was the best recruiting class in the Mountain West? Some nice talent there, too. So, yeah, there could be some interesting developments the next few days as far as the staff goes, as far as maybe a little longer term, which players want to follow him here as well. So just, you know, a time of great transition, a time of a lot of angst and anxiousness, and also a time of a lot of excitement and wonder of what could be, Derek. So it's kind of an early Christmas present for Purdue football fans to sort of let their mind wander to see where maybe this thing can land one day.
Tom, thanks so much for joining me as always. And I know it's been a very busy couple of weeks here and digging out and talking to sources and getting all the news and then digesting the news like we're all doing after the introductory press conference was earlier today. But I think some optimism, and you haven't had a lot of that in the last couple of months, as there always is with a new hire. I get it. But I do think that this is mostly being received positively, which is definitely what you want with so much negativity floating around the program the last few months.
Yeah, real quick, too, just lastly, just to think where the program was at in November, right? Battered and bruised, blowout losses. The fan base enraged about the direction of the program. Hope was gone, Derek. And now with this change, fans have hope. Fans have hope. Administrators have hope. Players have hope. And what is life without hope, right? And you're already seeing some of the positiveness in social media posts from fans and message board posts that, hey, it's like a newborn baby, right? Everything's possible with your baby. Man, this kid's going to be an astronaut and split the atom. Everything's possible when there's something new, right? And Purdue can hang their hat on having a lot of hope now. The page has been turned. They have a guy who's a lot like them. And again, like I said, the possibilities are kind of fun to think about and for fans to contemplate here going into the winter, then spring football. Derek, by the time we get to August, these fans left Purdue 12-0 playing in the college football playoff.
That's right. I don't know about that schedule though, Tom. It's a little bit easier than 2024, but that's not saying much, right? How it looks on paper, at least. He's gonna have to hit the ground running, that's for sure, because there's a lot to fix right now with the program. But I agree, the hope, the optimism, the good vibes, I think that's what you wanted to return to West Lafayette, and at least this week we have it. But it'll be interesting to see how the pieces fall into place. Thanks so much. We'll catch up again soon.
You got it. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks to Tom Dienhart for joining us. Another busy week in football news and another busy week in basketball news as well. We welcome on Golden Black columnist Brian Newbert to talk about the Boilers, who opened up the Big Ten season with a split. I have, Brian, a pessimistic glass half empty view, and then I also have an optimistic glass half full view. And I feel pretty strongly about both of them, but which one would you like me to start with in the takes department first?
Oh, I always start with the negative.
Okay, negative.
Give me the glass half empty.
I'm very troubled by how easily Purdue seems to allow themselves to be taken out of what they want to do offensively, disrupted on that end. I was willing to give them a pass for Marquette because Marquette looks like they might be Final Four good, right? But Penn State's better than expected, okay? I'm not going to dog too much on Penn State, but I just didn't feel like that level of play was an acceptable level of play, especially in the first half the other night.
Yeah, I think, you know, Penn State's a high-pressure team. They played really well defensively. They really, really got up for Purdue, and Purdue didn't respond. And I think, you know, Purdue does have a little bit of a ball handler issue. I think they really only have one true ball handler. I think Matt Painter's tried to configure things to where he'd have a third ball handler on this team. I think we've come to find out CJ Cox is more of a scorer than he is a true ball handler. Jakari Harris is more of kind of like a wing type combo guard than he is a true ball handler. And it's kind of left Purdue with like 1.5 ball handlers on the floor at all times. And I think when you play opponents like Marquette, when you play opponents like Penn State, who are going to play the way they do, it can really get sort of hairy at times. And that's what kind of happened at Marquette. That's absolutely what happened at Penn State. I do think Penn State was better. I said the same thing about Marquette, but Penn State was better at being Penn State than Purdue was at being Purdue, if that makes any sense. That's my way of saying, my convoluted way of saying that I thought Penn State was better than Purdue was bad. But I think anytime you have an outcome like that, somewhere in the middle, the truth does lie. I do think you have to give Penn State a lot of credit for doing it to Purdue, but you also have to acknowledge the fact that Purdue didn't rise to the occasion and actually play better than it did. It needed to be stronger with the ball. It needed to be more patient. It needed to be a little more savvy in terms of ball faking and just taking a deep breath after you got into half court offense, things like that. And it just didn't. It was hurried up. It was kind of a mess.
So optimistic, glass half full, other side of the coin. I understand that they got run off the floor in Milwaukee and State College, so they didn't get into a crunch time situation. But in these other games, when the chips have been down, Purdue's responded. They did it when the Alabama and Ole Miss games both felt like they were kind of teetering and getting away. I don't think the Maryland game necessarily felt like that, but still, you know, Maryland's up 5 points, 7-8 minutes left, and it felt like Purdue maybe was starting to enter the danger zone, and boom, they go on an 18-5 run. I've been very encouraged by how they've responded when really, like I said, the chips have been down in these kind of crunch time moments, because we're having a very different conversation if this is a 5-5 team as opposed to an 8-2 team right now.
Absolutely. The Maryland game, I think that it goes beyond crunch time. If you watch the first half of that game, you saw two teams go in the locker room in a game where a lot of stuff had to change pretty profoundly for Purdue to win that game, because things didn't trend very well in the first half for Purdue. They weren't turning the ball over, and they still weren't winning. They were getting clocked on the glass. Maryland was making them look small, which no one has done to Purdue in 20 years, 10 years, 15 years, whatever time frame you want to use. And Purdue wasn't drawing a lot of fouls, which is often the way that, you know, it kind of takes a toll on people. This seems a little bit different in that regard. It was getting open threes, but it wasn't making open threes. So a lot of stuff was going against Purdue there in that first half. And you kind of looked at the way that first half played out, and you just had no idea how this was going to turn out. Something was going to have to change. And sure enough, something did change. Purdue started rebounding like crazy. They really got loose in half-court offense. Braden Smith played at a magical level. Trey Coffman-Wren played really well in conjunction with Braden Smith. Purdue started making timely shots, you know, things like that. But in the first half, they just kind of had to survive. They had to steal points here and there. Miles Colvin and Cameron Heidi loomed large in that regard. But I think you have to give Purdue a lot of credit for just hanging in there against Maryland and then making all the plays in the last 10 minutes. You got to give Purdue a lot of credit for Alabama. That was a game there halfway through the second half that could have gone either way. If not, was trending toward Alabama. Ole Miss, the same thing. Purdue was down 7 after being up 17. It looked over to me. And as soon as I posted on our message board, I think this game is over. The game wasn't over because I think within seconds somebody did something. There was a 3 or a 3-point play or something. So Purdue's had this ability to sort of rise to that occasion in some of these close games. And that's what your kind of your championship pedigree and all this experience you have does. It just didn't get into situations at Marquette and Penn State where that was going to matter. Purdue just got kind of blitzed in both of those games.
I used to be a definitive statement poster, like on Twitter and things like that. And then I learned attach qualifiers to everything. So just write so far or write right now to everything that you send. Because then,
it appears
because then, Brian, you know how this, you get 38 responses that say this aged well.
Yeah.
And then you're just like, okay, guys, like don't act like you weren't thinking that. I thought the game was over when Ole Miss went up 7-2. So like, don't act like we weren't all thinking the same thing, but I have been impressed by the way that, you know, we were waiting to see in a post Zach Edey world, how this team would survive when the chips are down. And I think they've done a pretty good job of that so far. Let's talk about Cam Heidi as well. I know, you know, the point total was, some of that was largely in when the game was somewhat decided, or I guess maybe you could say that he made some of the baskets that kind of, you know, the 3-pointer and the dunk at the end that sort of put the game on ice. But if you add up both ends, especially with as active as he was defensively, was that Cam Heidi's best overall game so far this season against Maryland?
For this season, yeah. I'm trying to think of what the other game was earlier in the year.
Marshall, he played well.
Well, that doesn't count.
He had shots against Ole Miss. I think he was the Ole Miss game where he was perfect from three.
NC State might have been the game where he.
Okay, maybe that was NC State.
Because I only remember from the post game interviews, it was Colvin one game, Heidi the other, and maybe Colvin was the first game. No,
Colvin was the Ole Miss game.
Definitely the second game.
Yeah.
Colvin won the freaking game. How can I not remember that? Heidi did some really good things against NC State, as I recall, to the point where I remember considering this very question after the fact is, was that Cam Heidi's best game? He had like a 24-point game against Rutgers last year. But no, he's, if it wasn't his best game, it was certainly one of them. That's the cop-out I will use, but he was definitely very, very good. I think he and Miles Colvin, I tend to lump them together because there's some commonalities between the two of them that when they really play with energy and they're really engaged and things like that, and they sprint the floor, productivity kind of finds them. And you saw in the first half, Maryland sitting in that zone and they're both kind of able to run through it and use their athleticism a little bit. Camden Heidi gets that early end one where he's just cutting through a couple defenders standing around. Miles Colvin gets a couple putbacks where nobody's blocking him out. Just got a big alley to the basket. He actually takes it. You know, he would have stood there watching last year. But, no, Camden Heidi was really good. And, you know, some of his 15 points came after the game was decided, but a lot of those 15 points were part of the reason the game was decided because that 3-pointer he made was – probably the biggest shot of the game in terms of putting it away. And then that 3-point play there with the dunk at the end was kind of a statement play where, you know, Purdue was going to be aggressive putting that game away and ended up dunking the ball, attacking that press and got an end one out of it. So just a really good active game for a guy who's really kind of coming on here these first few weeks of the season.
Purdue, I'm going to sound like I'm settling here, but I've watched Auburn a little bit, and they look like they're going to be an absolute bear to play.
Yes.
So I'll lay out a hypothetical situation. If Purdue gets this game Saturday in Indy against A&M, and I would have handed – let's assume – what are they playing, Toledo or something like that? They've got one other conference game, I know. Yeah. If I would have handed you the results sheet back on Halloween, would you have taken a 9-2 non-con if it ends up being that way for this team?
Absolutely.
Yeah, me too.
It's just there was going to come a point in time where Purdue was going to lose non-conference games. And mm-hmm. Purdue schedules to lose non-conference games. They just don't. They just haven't. You know, Purdue schedules the world, again, with the big picture in mind, thinking that if we go to Marquette in November and we lose, you'd rather win, but that loss is going to look good on the resume and that experience is going to make you better. And when you look at what Purdue's done the last couple of years in terms of their NCAA tournament seedings and where they were as a team at the end of Big Ten conference races, and in last year's case, at the end of the NCAA tournament, it's worked. But them going undefeated all those years in a row in non-conference play was improbable. Not sustainable. And you could say that about anybody, like Duke, whoever. Kansas could play these schedules, and you'd expect them to lose games every year. And it was only a matter of time before Purdue not only got tripped up, but got tripped up a couple of times. And, you know, Purdue has been really good at home, as it's always going to be. But when you go on the road early in the season, like where Purdue's last two losses have come, it's just kind of the cost of doing business. And, you know, Auburn's going to be an absolute monster. There's no way around that. So Purdue's not you're just talking about non-conference games. So the Penn State game, we should exempt from this. But, yeah, I would – early in the season, I didn't know Auburn was going to be roughly number one in the country. So it's hard for me to deconstruct what I would have thought to be the case in that regard. But I think two losses in non-conference play is still a pretty good run for a team that's, you know, got some young players and has had some things exposed about it here these last couple of weeks. Purdue doesn't have tremendous functional size at this point anyway. Daniel Jacobson might have helped that, might not have helped that. Again, we talked about the guard issue. Purdue's short on ball handlers. That's kind of coming to light right now. So for Purdue to have kind of recreated itself the way it has had to, playing very different lineups right now than it's used to, and maybe still go 9-2 or whatever the final record will be in non-conference play, that's not horrible. It's probably actually pretty good.
So we get in the holidays here. It should be a fun one Saturday at Gainbridge Fieldhouse. It was a really fun game last year and fun atmosphere against Arizona. Texas A&M, a very good team. Kind of a football-like schedule. Let's hope for not football-like results here with A&M, Auburn, and Toledo all kind of once a week. I think that Toledo game is actually a Sunday game coming up here for the next three. But you can check out Brian's work right here at goldenblack.com for all the latest and greatest when it comes to the Boilers. Thanks so much, my man. We'll talk to you next time.
No problem, Derek. Thanks, man.
That's Brian Neubert, and that is our show for this Tuesday. Thanks so much for joining us. And a final thank you to our great sponsors, Purdue Federal Credit Union, the official credit card for Purdue fans, East End Grill and Ripple and Company, two distinctive bistros across the street from one another on the far end of Main Street in Lafayette, the Whitaker Inn, this Midwestern oasis, perfect for a relaxing staycation or a weekend getaway, escape from the ordinary at the Whitaker Inn, and the Sand Valley Resort. Celebrate all that the wilderness provides this fall and winter at Sand Valley. Start planning your next winter getaway by visiting sandvalleypursuits.com. Finally, our friends at the Purdue Institute for Cancer Research, where they have a history of innovation and one goal for the future, defeat cancer. Join the fight and donate to the Purdue Institute for Cancer Research today. And don't forget to sign up to become a member for Tom's work, for Brian's work, and all of the best Purdue coverage right here at goldandblack.com. We'll keep the content train going. Obviously, Gold and Black Radio will be once a week, so this Tuesday show will stay once a week. We won't have the Friday shows anymore with football season, at least on the field, being over, even though there's plenty to talk about football-wise, and I would suggest that you catch up on all that Tom has written about. But lots going on with the Wednesday night show, the Saturday show, Alan, Carm, the rest of the guys. Tom's been very busy here. Brian, it's just going to be a grind for the next couple of months. We hope you'll subscribe and support the great work that everybody's doing right here at goldenblack.com. But as far as I'm concerned, hope you enjoyed this show, and we'll see you next Tuesday right here on Golden Black Radio. Have a great week.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. And now I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free and each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
The best New Year's deals are happening now at Tanger Outlets. Celebrate with up to 70% off savings from Nike Factory Store, Coach, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. From activewear to accessories, beauty and apparel, find everything you're looking for to kickstart the new year. The clock is ticking. Hurry into Tanger Outlets to save more. Hundreds of brands, unbeatable value. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.